Bomb Studios in Austin, Texas. It's The Real News with your host, David Nutt.
Welcome to the broadcast on this Tuesday, December the 12th, 2017. I'm David Knight. We have some interesting updates coming up today on the Bundy trial. There may be a mistrial there, and there should be. There's been a lot of prosecutorial misconduct. There have been numerous private meetings held with defense and prosecution and defendants talking about this, and now it's being reported by multiple media outlets that this may be a mistrial. We're going to have joining us Sherry Duvalle, who has been following this very closely with Redoubt News. She has been there reporting on the trial constantly, so she's going to be joining us later in the broadcast with an update about that, what this may mean. It was just recently that we had the judge, Gloria Navarro, who had presided over some of the cases of people who had traveled there to help the Bundys, that Gloria Navarro had decided that because of misconduct, misrepresentation, and outright lies by the government, BLM and others, that there really wasn't a danger from the Bundys, that they could be released. They'd been held without bail for nearly 2 years. And so that was a major turning point. And now it looks like even more information has come out. So we'll be talking to Sherry Duvalle about what is happening in the Bundy Ranch. We'll also be talking to Joseph Farah of WND. We'll be talking about some of the things that have happened over the weekend, especially the polar bear episode, the dying polar bear, if in fact he was dying, as proof of global warming. That came out over the weekend. It was really picked up throughout the mainstream media. Another example of failed fake news. And so we'll be talking to him about that, as well as President Trump's accomplishments and the failure of our immigration policy as revealed in this latest terror attack in New York City. We're going to talk about that. President Trump and Sarah Sanders, and we've got a great clip of a back and forth that happened between Jim Acosta and the other people, the White House press corps. It shows you why they're so frustrated with Sarah Sanders, because she does such a great job. She is a boss. And Chelsea Handler and the rest of them cannot argue with her. And so, as you see, if you try to get into a discussion with these people or you go to their rallies, all they do is yell and scream names at you. You're a racist. You're a white supremacist. You're Islamophobe, so forth and so on. Well, they call her all kinds of horrible things. But you'll see in this press conference why they are so desperate to try to destroy her on a personal basis, because they cannot argue with her. she is it's excellent to watch this. But the point that they were making, as well as talking about whether or not the mainstream media is out to get President Trump. Do you think? But the point that they were also making in the press conference was the fact that this is another example of failed immigration policy. This guy who struck out in a failed way, wrapped himself in Christmas tree lights and tried to set off a pipe bomb. I mean, but anyway, assuming that he didn't get his pipe bomb plans from The Onion and it had worked, it would have been a horrible thing. And he came here because he had family members who had won the visa lottery. Yes, there it is again, the visa lottery. That's how we get our terrorists. We just roll the dice and gamble with our lives, gamble with the lives of American citizens. And he won the lottery. We lost. Actually, he didn't come in directly on the visa lottery. That's even a more interesting part of it. He came in because he was a family member of somebody who won the visa lottery. What a mess our immigration policies are. And this will be another example for President Trump to do the right thing. You know, the correct approach to handling this stuff is not to create a police state. It is not to use this as an excuse to do more surveillance of the American public. The correct response to this is to get control of the borders. I said on December 7th, when we were talking about the Pearl Harbor attack, I said, if you understand history, you understand that FDR wanted that attack. It doesn't excuse the Japanese doing it, but he wanted it. He invited it. He opened us up to that. And that's what our immigration policies are doing to us today. It is a 21st century version of Pearl Harbor. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
You found it. the InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. It is December the 12th, 2017. As I was saying at the top of the hour, we have an update coming up today on the Bundy trial. It appears that this may be a mistrial because of misconduct and lies by the government, and it's about time that happens. We're going to be talking to Sherry Duvalle of Redoubt News, who's been following this closely. A lot of media outlets are reporting that they believe a mistrial is in the works, and it should be, and we'll tell you why, and we'll see if that is really what is happening. We'll also be joined by Joseph Farah. We'll be talking about the latest phony claim of the environmentalists to say that global warming is man-made and we're killing all the polar bears. How many times are they going to go back to that image? But they've got a new poster child now. I guess instead of Smokey the Bear, we can have Polar the Bear. Only you can save climate change because you are responsible. You're responsible for all this. And so he had a great piece on that. We're going to talk to him about that, as well as the New York City terror attack and President Trump's victories, all the different things that he's done. You know, CNN talks about him as being the promise keeper, and they're very upset about that because they don't like him doing what he said because they don't appreciate his policies. But I think the interesting thing about this is that as we look at all these different policies, especially this Jerusalem embassy thing, as I mentioned before, we've had all of these Democrats, many of whom are now criticizing him, people like Dianne Feinstein, Bernie Sanders, had voted for this over the years multiple times. Going back to 1995, the Jerusalem Embassy Act coming from Congress, they voted for that. And they said, how dare him actually do what we voted for? We've seen the same thing on the right with Obamacare, haven't we? And many other issues. And as a matter of fact, Feinstein and Bernie Sanders voted for this as recently as June of this year. All of the Democrats who are criticizing him voted for that. So we'll talk to Joseph Farah. And we're also going to be talking about the amazing press conference with Sarah Huckabee facing these people in the White House press corps. You'll see why they cannot keep up with her. We're going to talk about Megyn Kelly's revenge. Yes, she is back. It's Megyn Kelly versus Donald Trump 2.0. You thought she was going to go and do happy news at NBC? No, she's still focused on Donald Trump. And she's still got blood coming out of her eyes or whatever, as President Trump said. And we're going to talk about taxes as well. You know, it's kind of interesting as we look at the tax plans here. We've got China and the EU saying they're worried about a tax cut. It's not just the uniparty, the establishment Republicans and Democrats who are, I don't know if we can cut taxes or not. You know, people like Bob Corker, who sat silent. He won election in 2006. He had nothing to say all of those years that Barack Obama was increasing the deficit. He increased it by $10 trillion over his 8 years in office. While Bob Corker was sitting there, Bob Corker had nothing to say. And yet, you have a projection, which, of course, they're going to project what's going to happen in deficits and the cumulative debt. If you're going to project that out over a decade, that should be taken with a large dose of skepticism. Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, we're talking about 2.5 presidential terms here. And even if President Trump does 2 terms, we're still halfway into the next presidential term. And who knows what's going to happen with Congress? They can't make a projection like that. But of course, they come in and say, if it's going to increase this deficit by $1 trillion over 10 years, can't have it. Can't have it. That was the argument from the uniparty. Now we've got China and the European Union saying, ooh, this is going to change everything. This is an aggressive attack by President Trump against our economies. See, they think it's going to help us, don't they? The same people who are saying, the mainstream media and the Democrats who are saying tax cuts, that doesn't do anything for the economy. Doesn't do anything at all for the economy. Look at what has happened over the last year just with the expectations of tax cuts, whether or not they're real or not. And then we've got China saying we've got to combat Trump's tax reform. We're going to have tough battles ahead. Oh, why is that? Because it would help us in principle. The details are where we have to be careful, because the details were put in by the GOP establishment. And they did it in a hurry because they had all year to work on this and they didn't really want to. And it was only till President Trump held their feet to the fire, made them do this, that they actually started to take a look at it. And they're kind of like the people who wait all semester and then cram for the final exam. They get a failing grade. See people do that in engineering, and it's like, no way you're going to catch up on this stuff in the last week or so. You don't do the work as it comes up, as the Republicans did not do, and then they wind up, when they get here, it's like, uh-oh, we've got some people are going to get taxed more than 100% on their marginal rate. So once they get up to a certain level, any dollars they make beyond that, they will pay more than all of those dollars. So it'll be a disincentive. So they make another $100, they maybe pay another $110 in taxes. So they start going backwards because of the Republicans taking a backwards approach to this. And it is very unpopular with a lot of people. And if they do stuff like that, if they've made those kinds of mistakes, then the details of what Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and these other people have put in there. Yes, a tax cut is what we need. And they have fought it tooth and nail. And they put together, hobbled together something that as people are starting to look at the details, they're scratching their heads. And now we have 53% of the people, according to a CBS poll, disapprove of the GOP tax bill. Only 35% approve. That's 52% of independents and, of course, 84% of Democrats. Democrats are going to disapprove of any tax bill because they think that their neighbor is going to pay for free stuff for them. They never think it's going to come out of their hide. They never understand how it kills the economy, how it costs them jobs. They never understand that. They always think that they're going to get something from the other guy. And so the party of kleptocracy always endorses higher taxes. But they do have to look at these details. Meanwhile, we have in North Korea, we're still seeing aftershocks. You know, the big nuclear test that they had in September, which many people believe was the size of an H-bomb, didn't just generate, as they say in the BBC, didn't just generate diplomatic shockwaves, but it also caused a 6.3 magnitude earthquake. And aftershocks, you maybe didn't know this, aftershocks have been continuing ever since. And this last Saturday, the U.S. Geological Service said that it had detected two more, sparking significant debate about what might be going on underground. So, Kim Jong-un set this up in an area that is geologically unstable. And now, what has he started? Maybe he has awakened Gojira. And that may be what's happening. We'll have to wait and see what will happen with that. And the Pentagon is now being pushed back by multiple judges. The Pentagon said after several judges have weighed in on President Trump's order to ban transgender people into the military, the Pentagon has said that they are going to allow transgender recruits to enlist in the military beginning January the 1st. And this is much to the chagrin of Corporal Klinger, who is still trying to get his Section 8. They say three federal courts have ruled against the ban, including one Monday in Washington State in October. U.S. District Judge Colleen Coller-Cottley barred the Trump administration from proceeding with its plan to exclude transgender people from military service. So they say they're still going to be doing psychological evaluations. Well, that might be that might be the key here. Where is the lobby for people who have flat feet? And why can't they be in the military as well? You know, we do have a lot of reasons that we exclude people from being in the military. It isn't an automatic thing, and it shouldn't be. If you're not physically or mentally sound, then you should not be in the military. Or if it's going to create the kinds of personnel issues that are there. Again, you want to get a somebody with flat feet, where is their lobby to get them into the military? Don't they have a right? Well, actually, no, they don't, and neither do the transgenders. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. Welcome back. I'm David Knight. On this December the 12th, 2017, we have pulled the trigger on our massive Christmas savings at InfoWarsStore.com. A lot of our most popular items like BrainForce Silver Bullet you'll find on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. Our multivitamin formula, Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, is still 50% off. And we've also got Super Blue Fluoride Free Products, also still 50% off. But we've added more savings. We've got Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid, 50% off. Survival Shield X2, that's our nascent iodine, 50% off. Super Male Vitality, 50% off. DNA Force, 33% off. Alpha Power, that's our introductory price of 50% off. And Prostaguard, 50% off. So take a look at the Christmas specials that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We thank you for your support, and it's a great time to take advantage of these big discounts and support your health as well. I was saying just before the break that other economies, maybe we should send these letters that they are sending to Steve Mnuchin saying, this isn't fair. You're cutting your taxes and you're cutting your regulations. It's going to put you at a competitive disadvantage to us. China is very upset about this. Very upset. They have put out a report saying they fear, quote, a double whammy that will sap money out of China by making the U.S. a more attractive place to invest. Now, how unfair is that? I mean, we should be not making the U.S. a great place to invest and to make money. They're saying that they're concerned not only about the tax reform, but also about the fact that the Fed is going to raise rates. They keep raising them a quarter at a time. We've seen this happen before. It burst the real estate bubble when Alan Greenspan did it. But the federal government, at one level or the other, whether it is the uniparty establishment Republicans and Democrats who push against tax cuts, telling us it isn't going to help the economy, well, China thinks it will. And if it gets through, you can always count on the Federal Reserve to put the brakes on the economy. We are not going to be allowed to have the kind of growth that China and other countries have been allowed to have. No, the federal government, the Federal Reserve, they're not the federal government. They're the private Federal Reserve will come in and put a lid on it. They'll start raising rates, and that's what they're talking about. So the Chinese, interestingly enough, maybe they took some of the Keynesian economics classes. let's hope that they did. They don't know what they're doing. But they're going to raise rates. They said they're going to have higher interest rates, tighter capital controls. They're going to keep people from getting money out of China. You know, they had prohibitions on cryptocurrencies. That didn't help them. And actually, the number of people buying cryptocurrencies with Chinese currency doubled and tripled after they did that. For a while, it had quadrupled right after their prohibition. Then they were concerned about their stock market. And so they told people, you cannot sell stocks. And guess what? The stock market plunged because everybody started selling stocks in the Chinese stock market. So we're going to see if their tighter capital controls work. They said they're going to have frequent currency intervention to keep money at home and to support the yuan. Well, that's just going to push people out even further, isn't it? But it's not just China. The five biggest EU economies are warning about the U.S. massive tax overhaul. The EU's top five economies are warning the U.S. that its massive tax overhaul could contravene some of its international obligations and risks, quote, having a major distortive impact on international trade. In other words, America could win hugely. And they don't like that. They don't want America made great again with tax cuts and regulation. And so they're firing off angry letters to the U.S. Secretary of the Treasury, Steven Mnuchin. The finance ministers of Germany, France, Britain, Italy, Spain all wrote that they had significant concerns about these tax initiatives. They're very worried that we're going to win. They don't want to see us win. That tells you a great deal right there, doesn't it? And one of the ways that we have to win is to get rid of Obamacare. That is the biggest anchor around our economy, tied to the feet of the U.S. taxpayer and the middle class. Basically, Obama tied this anchor to our feet and threw us into the water. And we've got to cut that rope. And that means that we're going to have to cut out the people who are the leaders of the GOP. And that begins today with the election in Alabama. We're going to talk about that coming up as well. We have to get rid of the people like Mitch McConnell. We have to get rid of the people like Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan was picked to be the vice presidential candidate for Mitt Romney because he supported open borders, because he supported RomneyCare or Obamacare, whichever one you wanted. I mean, you want your crony capitalist mandated health insurance subsidies at your expense. You want that with a R on it, or you want it with a T on it? You want it with a young, cool black guy, or you want it with a tidy, whitey, fighting whitey guy like Mitt Romney? Either way, you were going to get Obamacare. And you're going to get Obamacare as long as we got people like Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and John McCain and others like that in the Congress. So we're going to have to get rid of them. And here's an example. A Tennessee insurance company very near collapse after a staggering 59% premium surge. You cannot go up every year 50, 60%. It's killing some of the smaller insurance companies, and it is killing the U.S. middle class. Many people, there was the article I just read yesterday, a couple in Florida. Anybody who is responsible enough to pay for their own health insurance is getting killed with this. The couple in Florida was paying $40,000 for health insurance. People are paying more than they're paying for their home mortgage. It's unsustainable. It is not affordable. It is not health care. It's not even Obamacare. It is the Obama tax, and we've got to get rid of that tax, that regulation that is dragging us to the bottom of the sea. And if you want to save money, here's an example for Bob Corker. Let's expose the criminals who have milked the U.S. taxpayers $17 million to cover up their sexual harassment crimes. Here's another exhibit rolling out. Alcee Hastings, Democrat of Florida, a liberal black member of Congress, part of the black congressional delegation. He's been in Congress since 1993, and he has had $220,000 paid to cover up his sexual harassment. This came out of documents that were obtained by roll call. The woman who is a former staff member that is accusing him, her name is Winsome Packer. Winsome. I mean, with a name like Winsome, how could he resist, right? Her parents must have seen a funny thing happen on the way to the forum. But anyway, this is a funny thing happened on the way to the congressional committee or to Congress or the steps of the Capitol. And we need to stop letting these funny things that happen be covered up and be paid for by you instead of these individuals. And it is people, I'll remind you again, people like the virtue signaling Democrats who were in charge of Congress through most of those years. People like Nancy Pelosi, who doubled down and defended Al Franken, John Conyers for a very long time before they would do anything about it. They have given cover. They have given secrecy and subsidy to these predators in Congress. And they're not just predators on these staff members who work for them. They are predators in your life as well. They are stealing from you in massive ways, just like Obamacare. And they continue to feather their own nest at your expense. They have to be removed. Hopefully today is the beginning of this, because if you see Roy Moore win there, you're going to see more of these people just retire. Why spend tens of millions of dollars of cash that they could retire with and still lose?
And now, live and uncensored, broadcasting from the great state of Texas, worldwide, it's David Knight.
Bangladesh. Yes, that's the where the guy is from. Bangladesh. Tried to pull off that bomb yesterday. Fortunately, he didn't have the slightest clue as to what he was doing. Perhaps he got the bomb plans off of The Onion. Because when you listen to what he put together, it was sugar and Christmas tree lights and sugar and spice and everything not nice. He put a bunch of stuff in there. Had no clue as to what he was doing. But I think this is the most important thing to come out of this. People asking questions. It was asked by the Free Thought Project. And we're going to talk about the immigration aspect because that's important as well. And President Trump and Sarah Sanders pointed that out yesterday. But think about the fact that we got that surveillance footage that you just saw there. They were just rolling that as B-roll if you're watching the broadcast. We got that surveillance video of the New York terrorist immediately, and we still don't have one single image of the Vegas shooter anywhere in that hotel months later. Free Thought Project, good shout out to them for looking at that. When I saw this, like, of course, that is the lead story of all of this, I believe. After the blast, it happened at 7:20 in the morning, Eastern time, during rush hour. The suspect was almost immediately identified, and they had a profile of him released immediately. They said he got in the U.S. in February 2011. He came in with his parents and 3 to 4 siblings. He subsequently obtained a green card. They won the visa lottery, as we'll point out later on. He was able to piggyback on that with chain immigration. Those the two big problems that we have, And he became a permanent U.S. resident. He said, they've been bombing my country. I want to do damage here. Within minutes of the attack, however, here's the key thing. We had surveillance footage from the tunnel released. Showed him detonating the bomb. In no time at all, we knew everything about this guy. How did they parse out information to us from Las Vegas? Most of which we don't have even yet. Okay? It all happened within hours, as Free Thought Project points out. It was immediately released to the public without anyone having to demand it. But then contrast that with what we saw in Las Vegas, how they parsed out the information, how the first version was completely rolled back as being totally false and a lie. Then the second version came out, and it was totally false and a lie. And then the third one came out, and then they had the hero security guard, who had been labeled a hero security guard because the initial version told us that he got there at the very end and he stopped the shooting. And then they found out that then they reversed the timeline. Then, I don't know what they found out, but anyway, then they reversed the timeline on us and told us that he got there at the very beginning. And so he was just the first victim. He wasn't even a hero. And then they had to come up with another timeline because that timeline, version two, exposed MGM MGM Resorts, which owns the Mandalay Bay, exposed them to additional liability. So the sheriff was going to adjust that as well. And the hero security guard, who we don't know where he comes from, where he went, he disappeared for 5 days and he reappears on the Ellen DeGeneres show. And it's a very, very controlled interview, worshiping him as a hero and then mentioning it at the very end. And that's it. He's not doing any more press. All the people in the union, which actually not clear that he even belonged to that, not clear that the company that he supposedly worked for was even licensed and so forth. I mean, all of that stuff was nothing in the narrative is true. Nothing in the narrative is true. All of this stuff. It took us a long time for them to parse out stuff about Stephen Paddock. Where had he been? Had he allegedly traveled outside the U.S.? Well, we don't know if Stephen Paddock did. It's never been officially released, as Free Thought Project points out. We were only told that by CNN. And, of course, we all trust CNN, don't we? But it is where the deep state leaks their information from time to time. As the investigation reports, Free Thought, as the investigation of the New York Act of Terror shows us, it is quite easy to find out where people travel to and from, both inside and outside the U.S. So why haven't we been told to date exactly where Paddock traveled? And by the tens of thousands of cameras throughout these Las Vegas hotels, they've got cameras everywhere. Vegas hotels, casinos, with a very raison d'etre of surveillance cameras. I worked for a short period of time for Department of Transportation, setting up cameras and stuff and monitoring things. And those cameras that they use to see if there's accidents on the major thoroughfare so they can get somebody there to clear those accidents. And they didn't record the stuff there. At least they didn't when I was working for them. They didn't want to get caught up in any lawsuits, so they were very careful not to record anything. But those cameras, which could zoom way down on the interstate, those cameras came from the Las Vegas casinos. And you would not believe how far they can zoom in. And they have those cameras everywhere. And they're recording things all the time. And we haven't gotten a single thing out of Mandalay Bay. As they point out, not a single video, not even a still image showing Paddock in that hotel. There was a video that came out that was obtained by NBC that showed him in a different hotel 6 years earlier as part of a lawsuit. Never saw anything about him playing slot machines or carrying a bag anywhere in the Mandalay Bay. Nothing ever came out of that. So what is going on? When there was a little bit of information that came out, the undersheriff there, McMahill, said, I can confirm that those are photos from inside of the room, and they are, in fact, photos of our suspect. And we have opened up an internal investigation to determine the source of those leaks of those photos to the public. So you're not allowed to know anything. Still not allowed to know anything about the Vegas shooting. But within an hour or so, we knew everything about this failed terror attack, a real failed terror attack. We knew everything about that, everything about the man, everything about his family. And we know nothing to this date, nothing that is real about the Las Vegas shooting. So just hold that thought there for a moment. Now let's take a look at what's going on with the New York City terrorist. He says that he's upset about Israel. He's upset about Gaza. He's upset about Christmas pictures. Talking about the war on Christmas. Here it is right here. Says all of those things inspired his failed attempt to kill. He had a bomb that was made out of Christmas lights, sugar, and a battery, say the police. There you go. So that explains it to some degree. And we can be grateful for the fact that the guy is a blithering idiot, besides being very hateful. Full of hate for everybody. Full of hate for the Jews, full of hate for the Christians. He hates Christmas. He hates this country. Why don't you just go back home? Go back home to your own mosque and enjoy your life and leave us alone. Yeah, you want the stuff that we have, but you don't want the culture, the system that gave it to us, do you? A fourth Bangladeshi, he is the fourth one to enter the U.S. as an immigrant, only then to plot to harm America, reports Breitbart. In 2015, here's the history of some Bangladeshis. 24-year-old Bangladeshi national in 2015 was convicted and sentenced to 10 years in federal prison for providing material support to terrorists of the Al-Shabaab terrorist organization. In 2011 to 2012, he worked to coordinate overseas travel for an undercover FBI agent who he believed was a violent jihadist. And he led a group of Islamic terrorist sympathizers here in Austin, Texas, who pledged loyalty to then-Taliban leader Mullah Omar. In 2013, another Bangladeshi national, this one 21 years old, was convicted and sentenced for planting what he thought was a 1,000-pound bomb at the New York Federal Reserve in Manhattan's financial district. That guy had entered the U.S. on an F-1 visa, which allows international students to come to the U.S. every year. He came here, though, not as a student, but as somebody who had planned to come here as a representative for Al-Qaeda. He wanted to create a terror event. In 2006, we had a Bangladeshi who was 49 years old, convicted and sentenced to 15 years in prison after helping an FBI informant with a plot to sell weapons to terrorists. Since 2005, the U.S. has admitted and resettled 141,501 Bangladeshi nationals. In 2016 alone, more than 18,000. We'll tell you about the immigration status when we come back. Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this December the 12th, 2017. Again, our guests coming up later in the show are Sherry Duvalli, who will be joining us in the next hour. It appears that there may be a mistrial, and there very well should there should be. She has been covering the Bundy trial, the Bunkerville trials in Las Vegas, not just the one that just began with Clive and Bundy and family, but also the previous ones. And we've talked to her on numerous occasions. She's been covering it there in Las Vegas. Sherry Duvalli with Redoubt News will be joining us in the next hour. And in the third hour, we'll be joined by Joseph Farah talking about the latest poster child of the environmentalist, the polar the bear, starving there. And of course, it's your fault if you have a car. If you use electricity, it is your fault, according to the narrative that was being passed around this weekend. One of the bigger fake news stories that got a lot of attention in mainstream media, but not as much attention as some of the fake attacks on President Trump. And we also have some amazing video back and forth between Sarah Sanders and the White House press corps. Before we get back to the news, I want to talk about the reactions and the immigration policy that is at the heart of this attempted terrorist attack yesterday. It's only a matter of time before some of these guys figure out which end of the gun points away from them. And they're going to be successful. They're going to hurt a lot of people besides themselves. Fortunately, yesterday, the guy was totally incompetent. He's not only mentally incompetent, but he was filled with hate. And this kind of hatred, combined with our open immigration policy, our open borders, is exactly the type of thing that gave us Pearl Harbor. It is the 21st century version of Pearl Harbor. If you go back and look at what FDR did, this is the way we're being set up by the globalists. And so we're going to talk about the immigration policy here. Before we do, real quickly, I'll remind you of the massive Christmas savings that we've just launched at InfoWarsStore.com. We have many of our biggest selling items, our most popular items like BrainForce, Silver Bullet, InfoWars Life Select Survival Food are back on sale. And we have still extended the sale for Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, our multivitamin, multi-mineral formula that you can take without having a lot of pills. That is now 50% off. All of our Super Blue fluoride-free products, both the toothpaste, the mouthwash, we don't have fluoride in them. Instead, we have iodine and nano silver to fight bacteria that causes gum disease, that causes tooth loss and heart disease. We have that 50% off. And here's a list of some of the great specials, popular products we have at 50% off. We have Knockout, Survival Shield, Super Male Vitality, Alpha Power, that's our introductory price, also 50% off, and Prostaguard, all of those products, 50% off, and DNA Force, 33% off. Take a look at the sales that we have at InfoWarsStore.com, and we thank you for your support. All right, let's get back to what happened yesterday, the Port Authority. We have family members of the cops who ran to the sound of the explosion. Yes, they didn't stop it, but, you know, they didn't know what was happening there. And the guy was fumbling with his cell phone. They thought he was trying to set off some other explosion. So it was an act of heroism to run in there and to subdue this guy when you didn't know what he or other people had. And they point out the mom of one of the four officers who took down the would-be suicide bomber said, "I got goosebumps. I just wanted to start crying. Very proud of their sons and could not be more different than the family of this terrorist," who gets a lawyer from CARE, the Council for American Islamic Relations. The lawyer for CARE comes out and says, "Well, we're heartbroken by the violence that was attempted today, but we are outraged at the behavior of law enforcement against the family of this guy." The family that won the visa lottery, the family then that brought him in with chain migration, has the audacity to complain about how they were treated by law enforcement. Again, why don't you just go home? Why don't you just go back to your place? Ula reportedly told investigators that he chose a location because Christmas-themed posters. They're saying that they're outraged by the behavior of law enforcement officials who held children as small as 4 years old out in the cold and who held a teenager out of high school classes to interrogate him without a lawyer and without his parents. You know what? We're also angry about the fact that you have threatened our children multiple times with this. That's what we're upset about. You know, you got a mom there who's proud of her son, who is a cop, who risked his life to stop people like your son. That's just amazing. New York City terror suspect came to the U.S. as a relative of the visa lottery system. This is reported by Breitbart. They point out every year the visa lottery that is championed by New York Senator Chuck Schumer. People should remember that when you go to the polls in New York. You got all these terrorist events that are happening one after the other. Remember the one that just happened a few weeks ago where the guy mowed down with a car, mowed down a bunch of bikers? Another visa lottery situation. Gives out 50,000 visas to foreign nationals from multitude of countries, including those with known terrorist problems. So we're not allowed by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals or the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, we're not allowed to have any knowledge whatsoever about the people coming into our country from places that have known terrorist problems. Many times places that we are at war with. Whether or not we've declared that war, they have determined. Other people in the government, like their beloved Obama, have determined that these countries are dangerous enough that we need to be there and at war with them. And yet, we're not allowed to know who these people are, because there is no information about who these people are. But we just bring them in. That's one way you play the lottery, but we've got another lottery game. And that is one where we just, you know, award these visas to foreign people. We don't know who they are. Just come on in. You're next. And the price is right. Countries like Afghanistan, Algeria, Bangladesh, just like this. And here's what we've been seeing. They point out here, this guy came to the U.S. through the F-43 visa that allowed him to obtain a green card simply because his father's brother or his father's sister had recently been given a visa under the visa lottery. So he's got an uncle or an aunt who came in, and then the chain migration that we talk about all the time, chain migration, brought him in. So he's got an uncle or an aunt that won the lottery, and then he comes in because they got in, and then he gets a green card, and now he's an official U.S. citizen that absolutely hates our country, wants to kill people, just doesn't have the competence to do it. Under the visa lottery, they've had 14,869 Bangladeshi nationals enter the U.S. between 2007 and 2012. Since 2013, Bangladesh was thrown off the list of foreign countries eligible for the visa lottery because the country became one of the largest immigrant-sending countries to the U.S., with the number of chain migrants arriving from Bangladesh more than doubling between 2005 and 2016. Because if you don't know anything about these people, they can, I'm related to that guy over there. That guy, he's my uncle. Uncle Muhammad. Muhammad is my uncle, and my other uncle, Muhammad, both came in, so I need to be brought in under chain migration. So Trump says today's terror suspect entered our country through extended family chain migration, which is incompatible with national security. America must fix its lax immigration system, which allows far too many dangerous, inadequately vetted people to access our country. Congress must end chain migration. And we must end the interference of the lower courts with the president's prerogative of deciding who is coming in. So we need to stop these laws that enable this, and we need to allow President Trump to ban people who are coming here from countries that have a large internal group of people who are at risk when we cannot vet them, and we can't. Attorney General Jeff Sessions also came out and said Trump was exactly correct. He said, we have now seen two terrorist attacks in New York City in less than 2 months that were carried out by people who came here as part of our failed immigration policies that New York Senator Chuck Schumer supports. Just remember that when you go to the polls. Are you tired of having terrorists mow bikers down on the path? Are you tired of having terrorists who try to blow up the subway and the bus station? Then remember that when you go to the polls and vote against Chuck Schumer, because he's not tired of it. He's going to continue to leave the borders open. He's going to invite the terror attack in. And then, because what does he want? He wants to be able, he's part of the deep state. They want to have police everywhere. They want to bring the threat in. They want to turn us into the West Bank of Gaza, essentially. And once they have that kind of conflict brewing here, then they can establish a pervasive government to keep track of everybody. It does not serve the national interest, said Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The diversity lottery and chain migration. Yeah, it was a diversity lottery. We talk about the lottery. Let's remember, it was all about diversity. We need diversity so bad, we're just dying for it. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight. David Knight. Top of the news here, we have a $7.8 million settlement against a biomedical company, some companies, accused of profiting from fetal tissue sales. And this is happening in California. The settlement requires Da Vinci Biosciences and DV Biologics, a sister company, to permanently close its operations in California and pay $7.8 million through donations and biological materials to a medical school. So I thought this didn't happen. I thought this, they're coming after the people who did the undercover investigation, Center for Medical Progress. They had an activist judge there find them. I think it was, I'm just going from memory here, I think it was $700,000, saying that was outrageous. But yet, at the same time, they really were doing it. They really were doing it, and they're getting nearly an $8 million settlement for doing it. You know, when you look at this, again, today we have an election in Alabama. Any of you who are in Alabama, and even the people who aren't, who are watching this, maybe you should understand that a key issue in this race with the people of Alabama, they understand what is going on in the abortion industry here. Even if Doug Jones believes that his base that's going to get him elected is going to be black people, he's brought in a lot of Northeastern liberal Democrats, all of whom except for Joe Biden that I've seen were black. So he is trying to get past the post with the black vote. And yet it is the black people in Alabama who are being targeted by the abortionists that Doug Jones supports unconditionally, saying, well, once that child is born, I am the biggest supporter of their human rights. Are you really? Do you support Doug Jones? Do you support a family's right to choose whether or not and to what degree and what timing a family would vaccinate their child? No, you don't. No, you don't. You and your Democrat buddies don't care about that. And most of the establishment Republicans don't care about that either. Do you support the family's right to choose how they're going to educate that child? No, you're not pro-choice about that either. But you would allow that child to be killed right up to full term. One of the most aggressive and liberal abortionists out there. People like that surface in areas that are predominantly, you're going to find extremely conservative candidates running in areas that are dominated by liberals and vice versa. You're going to find hardcore liberals like Doug Jones running in an area like Alabama, because most of the Democrats, it's like, hey, man, I can't win here. So they're not going to run. And so you have the diehard ideologues, leftist ideologues like Doug Jones running in Alabama because they'll do it. They'll come up and do it. So we're going to take a look at what's going on with that election today. We're also going to take a look at, I mentioned it yesterday, read you some of the quotes from Frank Luntz and how he was pushing back and berating the people in his focus group who said that they were going to vote for Roy Moore. Seriously? Are you a Christian? How could you possibly do that? How could you possibly do that? And they explained to him some of the issues involved and the fact that they didn't find these witnesses credible. You know, Megyn Kelly had a lot of, had three women on yesterday on her morning program. And as I said earlier, this is her effort to come back and hit at Trump again. You think this is over? We got a story at InfoWars.com. Bill O'Reilly says, oh, it's going to hit real big in January. They're continuing recycled narrative of a Russian conspiracy is failing and is turning back on them. And so what they're going to do is they're going to come after President Trump with all the sexual harassment again. So they're reviving all this. This first part of this was Megyn Kelly. That's where it launched yesterday. Bill O'Reilly knows this because she was his protege for a long time. And so she has a press conference with these people. There is a leftist film company being funded by George Soros called Brave New Films. They've done documentaries that targeted the Koch brothers, Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, and others. Now they're going to focus on President Trump, and they're going to come at him through sexual harassment recycling charges. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
InfoWars.com studios in Austin, Texas. It's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Just talking about how Megyn Kelly is leading the charge to take another bite after President Trump. Because their Russian narrative, I believe, is collapsing on them. It is failing big time. They have to have something else to try to get him out. They're going to come after him in multiple ways anyway. So it isn't like, okay, well, we're only going to focus on one thing. They're going to come after him in multiple fronts. And let's pull up, actually, let's get the Nikki Haley comment that she had. We got a short clip here from Nikki Haley, because it's not just Megyn Kelly, formerly of Fox News, who has such a grudge against President Trump. Of course, Nikki Haley was always a vociferous never-Trumper. Big surprise when he picked her as UN ambassador. Very statist, very globalist, very never-Trumpish. And now she laid down on President Trump, threw down on him, threw some shade at him. Here's what she said when asked about sexual harassment.
Well, I mean, the same thing is, women who accuse anyone should be heard. They should be heard and they should be dealt with. And I think we heard from them prior to the election. And I think any woman who has felt violated or felt mistreated in any way, they have every right to speak up. I know that he was elected, but, you know, women should always feel comfortable coming forward, and we should all be willing to listen to them.
Okay, so let's bring it up again. And let's also do a documentary funded by George Soros. And the company is Brave New Films, and that was what Megyn Kelly was selling yesterday. So we got all the people who opposed President Trump in the election, and they lost, and now they're still opposing him, even his own UN secretary. Yeah, let's bring it up again. And the people that were on with Megyn Kelly, no new accusations. These are all things that people had looked at, did not find them credible, like the woman who said, yeah, he was groping my breast for a long time on the airplane. It's like, seriously? And you didn't know it. And nobody noticed it either on the airplane. That wasn't unusual at all. And so we have Megyn Kelly coming out and putting them back on. They said it really just broke our hearts for the American public to look at this and say, meh, we don't care. No, actually, what we said was, no, we don't believe you. We don't believe you. I don't believe it. You know, every woman can come out and say what she wants to say, but that doesn't mean that every woman is telling the truth. It doesn't mean that every woman is credible. And this is a good example of where this is going. Now, let's take a look at some of the other incredible stuff that has come out the last couple of days. We don't believe CNN either. We don't believe Megyn Kelly. We don't believe CNN. We don't believe so many of these people, NBC and others. And even Glenn Greenwald, who is not a fan of President Trump. Just like we talk about Alan Dershowitz, who is not a fan of President Trump's policies. But Alan Dershowitz has said, we do not want to criminalize political differences. There is no there in this investigation by the special prosecutor. And Glenn Greenwald is saying the U.S. media just suffered its most humiliating debacle in ages. He said last Friday, was the most embarrassing, one of the most embarrassing days for the U.S. media in quite a long time. The humiliation orgy was kicked off by CNN. With MSNBC and CBS close behind, with countless pundits, commentators, operatives joining the party throughout the day. By the end of the day, it was clear that several of the nation's largest, most influential news outlets had spread an explosive but completely false news story to millions of people while refusing to provide any explanation of how it happened. And when called on it, CNN's Brian Stelter, who I always refer to as George Costanza, because that's what he looks like. He comes out and he says, nah, nobody's going to be fired because we vetted this properly. They vetted it properly, and they left it out there for 12 hours. You know, the lie travels all the way around the world several times before the truth even gets its pants on. And, yeah, they are liar, liar, pants on fire here. But he points out the spectacle began Friday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, when the most trusted name in news spent 12 straight minutes on air flamboyantly hyping an exclusive bombshell report that seemed to prove that WikiLeaks last September had secretly offered the Trump campaign, even Donald Trump himself, special access to the DNC emails before they were published on the Internet. And when Brian Stelter comes out, he says, we vetted this properly. Nobody will be fired because we went through all the standard procedures. And, you know, these were government sources, presumably, who gave them the information. So we don't ever remember. We talked about this with fake Jake Tapper, CNN, and the story that he put out. And I was laughing at it, and I tweeted him. And before he blocked me, he said, this came from a trusted government source. It's like, oh, yes, well, let's always believe the government. Let's never be skeptical of anything the government would tell us, because especially if they're Democrats in government. If they're Republicans, you can't believe them even if they're telling the truth. And you, if they tell you the sky is blue. But if it's a Republican, if it's a Democrat telling this to you in the government, oh, well, don't ever question that. Don't ever question that. But they do question Sarah Huckabee. So let's play this clip, the back and forth between Jim Acosta saying, hey, we make honest mistakes. Remember, Joy Behar said, they weren't fake news. They just made a mistake. You know, mistakes are made. It wasn't any malice, was it? I said, okay, let's just call them mistake news. But it isn't sloppy reporting. There's malice involved. And Sarah Huckabee got into it with Jim Acosta. Here's that clip.
We just say, Sarah, that journalists make honest mistakes, and that doesn't make them fake news. But the question that
when journalists make honest mistakes, they should own up to them. Sometimes, and a lot of times you don't. But there's a difference. There's a very big... I'm sorry. I'm not finished. There's a very big difference between making honest mistakes and purposefully misleading the American people, something that happens regularly. You can't say, I'm not done. You cannot say...
That was completely fake, Sarah.
You cannot say... that it's an honest mistake when you're purposely putting out information that That's you right. know to be false, or when you're taking information that hasn't been validated, that hasn't been offered any credibility, and that has been continually denied by a number of people, including people with direct knowledge of an instance. This is something that I'm speaking about the number of reports that have taken place. Last couple of weeks, I'm simply stating that there should be a certain level of responsibility in that process.
This was not,
Brian, I called on Jim.
This is not the line of questioning that I was going down, but can you cite a specific story that you say is intentionally false?
Well, he pretends he doesn't know.
To mislead the American people?
Sure, the ABC report by Brian Ross, I think that was pretty misleading to the American people, and I think that it's very telling that that individual had to be suspended because of that reporting. I think that shows that the network took it seriously and recognized that it was a problem.
Sarah, Jim? If I may, though, I was going to ask a question about something
well,
else.
Well, you used it on something
maybe
else.
Maybe even CNN.
Sarah, if I may.
How about that?
Sarah,
not
I think
yet. We're going to keep moving, guys.
If I can ask about the president's accusations.
I'm moving to a different Jim. I'm sorry.
I know, but I didn't get a chance to ask the question that I wanted to ask, which is,
Jim,
can you just say once and for all whether these...
Jim, I'm going to say once and for all that I'm moving on to Jim Stinson, and I'm not taking another question from you at this point.
I was there.
A question about
respond to your attacks on
investment taxes.
If that's okay, I would like to ask the question that I had about these accusations of misconduct against the president. You said that he's denied them. Can you say whether or not they are false?
I'm not going to respond to other questions. Go ahead, Jim.
Some investors are saying the tax reform package.
There you go. That's why they hate Sarah Sanders. Because she does such... She will not be intimidated by these people. She will not be intimidated by Chelsea Handler and her personal nonsense attacks. You know, it's kind of interesting, James Wood. I saw this Twitter handle out there about Chelsea Handler and urination, and I didn't know what that was about. And then I looked it up. I saw this article, Daily Caller unpacks it, and it was James Wood started all that, mocking Chelsea Handler on Twitter. This started on Saturday. He posted a video in which she is urinated on in response to her frequent and personal attacks on White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders. And, of course, as we pointed out before, she likes to project her, let's say, lack of morals onto other people. And she downplayed the video where an actor decided to urinate on her in jest. And she said, oh, I thought it was so funny that somebody would pee on someone's face. I was laughing so hard I couldn't swim away. But who cares? It was just in the ocean. No, Chelsea Handler, it was in the toilet where you usually hang out as usual. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're going to have an update on whether or not there's going to be a mistrial in the Bundy case in Nevada. We're going to be talking to Sherry Duvalli of Readout News. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
It's that time of year when the world falls in love. Every song you hear seems to say, Merry Christmas, may your new year dreams come true.
Welcome back, I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Sherry Duvalli, who's been following the Bundy trial very closely. There may be some good news for the Bundy family. Certainly there's some good news for Sherry Duvalli. Congratulations, Sherry. I understand you're about to be a grandmother.
Yeah.
Your daughter is on the way to the hospital. I really appreciate you taking the time, this very important family time, to come and talk to us about this. But I know this is an issue that is very dear to your heart. But congratulations on your impending becoming a grandmother.
Thank you very much. We are very excited.
That's great. Is this the first grandchild?
No, it's number six, but it's daughter's first.
Wow, that's great. That's great. Well, congratulations. It's coming at a great time of year. Let's talk about what may be a big gift for the Bundy family and a gift to all of us, too, because let's understand, the rule of law and seeing justice done in this country is something that affects all of us. Whether or not you agree with the Bundys, they should have a fair trial. And what we have seen here has been a real miscarriage of justice. And now even this federal judge, Gloria Navarro, who has been firmly on the side of the government instead of being an impartial advocate here, even she has about had it now, hasn't she, Sherry? Tell us what has just happened. You got a headline article up on Readout News, and that's where you can find Sherry Duvalli's articles, readoutnews.com. Is the Bunkerville trial of the century finished? Why would that be finished? What happened that makes you think that that is finished?
Well, yesterday they only had about an hour and a half of public hearing, and then the jury was sent home. The jury actually is not expected back before the 20th of December, and the judge made comments that they may not be needed then.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing. You have in your article, they won't be back before December 20th if they are needed. If you say, if the jury is needed, that kind of sounds like, you know, I may be shutting this thing down. That's the comment that everybody has picked up on.
Yes, and it's absolutely true. She went into more of her secret hearings. She's really gone overboard on these secret hearings and sealed evidence and such like that. But when they came out, the general gist of it is there's at least 14 different items that the judge is not aware that the prosecution has turned over to the defense.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they're hiding evidence from the defense. And, of course, this judge, Navarro, has been complicit, actually has indicated in the past trials that we've seen. You cannot talk about the BLM is off limits. You can't talk about the guy who is running this operation, Dan Love. If somebody says they were afraid, you have to leave that there as if they were afraid of the protesters, not afraid of the BLM. And when the lawyer said, well, who are you afraid of? That's off limit. You can't talk about that. So, I mean, that's the way this judge has previously run this trial. So for her to say, this is over the top, that truly is amazing, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And I've got it on pretty good authority that they are right now just trying to figure out a graceful way for the prosecution to bow out of this case.
But, of course, if they bow out with this one, if they declare a mistrial here, they would most likely come after them one more time, at least, don't you think?
Well, that's where the questions come in. If the trials previously are definitely affected by the government not turning over all of the evidence. So I think there's a pretty good chance that the previous defendants that were found guilty, such as Todd Engel and Greg Burleson, and possibly the defendants that were forced into plea agreements, have very good grounds for appeal. But as far as the defendants going forward, that would be the question. Mm-hmm. Whether or not they will try them, or, you know, now that they've got all the evidence, you know, what is the prosecution's intention?
Yeah, because we've had previous trials, as you mentioned, a couple of individuals who were found guilty, other individuals who were found innocent of most of the charges, and, you know, it was a hung jury because the jury could see the bias. They could see how they were being lied to, and so they pushed back on that. But again, they just, if that happens in one trial, they say, okay, well, we learned some lessons from that, and we're going to give it another trial. We'll just look at that as practice for how we have to handle this thing. We're going to keep coming until we get the results that we want. It seems to be the way the government is operating in this situation.
Yes, absolutely. That's what they've done. And every trial has had the same theme, though it's had a little bit, you know, a few differences. The judge has backed up the prosecution every time, but this one's kind of flown into her face, and she cannot hide from it.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I haven't been at the trial. You've been at the trial watching it. Do you think that the continuing pattern of lies is wearing down the judge's prejudice? Is she starting to have a change of heart like we saw with the juries, realizing that, hey, this thing is so rigged, I'm not going to buy into this and go down with these people, go down with a ship? Or is she having, you think, some kind of, I know it's a subjective question, you think she's having some kind of a ethical crisis here?
Well, it is totally my opinion on this, but yeah, I think it's coming back to haunt her. She's realized that she's, you know, jumped on the wrong ship and it's going down, and she needs to pretty much save herself.
Yes, yes. It gets to the point where the corruption is just so obvious, so reeking, that even somebody who initially wanted to weigh in on this and do everything she could, put her thumb on the scale of justice for the other people, says, you know what, this is just a little bit too obvious. I've been caught with this. Talk about the multiple Brady violations. Define that for the audience.
Well, Brady violations are basically... I'm sorry, my mind is a little bit wandered.
I understand. You're there waiting for your grandbaby to come, but go ahead.
That's it. Brady violations are when the prosecution does not reveal exculpatory evidence to the defense. That
yes.
means evidence that could help the defense and possibly exonerate them. If
yes.
they don't turn over this evidence, then it's actually a violation that they could be held liable for, though it's not normally done.
And you're saying that there's at least 7 cases of that have come to light in this most recent trial?
Absolutely. There's at least 7 of those. There's also a multitude of what they call Giglio violations, which is not timely turning over evidence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they have...
Turning it over, but being late and turning it over so that it impairs the defense.
Well, an example of that would be on... In November, one of the agents there, one of the FBI agents, Agent Gavin, did a report, and I believe it was on possibly the 20th of November. She wrote a report, and they immediately turned it over to the defense, but the report contained information that should have been turned over a couple of years ago.
Yes.
So they're saying they didn't violate anything because they turned the report over right away, but the judge said, wait a minute, this is not something that should have been done, you know, today. It should have been done quite some time ago. So she's kind of on to them, and she is...
And the other thing that happened within, what is it, like the last month or two that caused the Bundy family to finally get bail after a couple of years was she realized... that they were lying and covering up information showing that they had snipers, that they had surveillance cameras and so forth. And they were hiding all that so they could pretend that the Bundys and the people who were there to support them were the aggressors, when in actual fact it was the other way around. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Sherry Duvalle. Readout News. Is the bunker trial, Bunkerville trial,
with
over?
Carnivore.
Of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Sherry Duvalle of Readout News. She has been following very closely the trial of the Bundy family members there after the Bunkerville standoff. These are people who have been locked away in jail. They have suffered, at the very least, you could say, harassment. They would say they were tortured, brutally treated in prison, held there for nearly 2 years. It was based on lies from the BLM and the federal government and prosecutors saying that they were the aggressors. If you look at the complaint, they charged Cliven, for example, brandishing a firearm. He never had a firearm the entire time I was there. Certainly wasn't doing it at the standoff. We were there for several days before the standoff. He wasn't even at the standoff, and he wasn't carrying a weapon. And neither was Ammon Bundy carrying a weapon. But they are charged with brandishing firearms. Absolutely false. And they put pressure on them, keeping them in jail, stacking up all these because they're trying to pressure them into taking a plea bargain. And that's what most of us in the U.S. do. We don't stand firmly for our rights. And, you know, Sherry, when I look at what's going on with the Bundy family, My heart goes out to them for their suffering because I agree with them on the constitutional issues. But they have stood steadfast and courageous, and no matter how much pressure is applied to them, they will put their life on the line, and they will not move off of these principles. And that's the thing coming out of this. All these people who are criticizing the Bundys and don't understand the issues here, they need to understand how they have been abused in this legal process, because if we don't fix this legal system, it's going to affect all of us, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. This family is an inspiration.
Yes.
I don't know how they've done it. It's not widely known, but Ammon was offered a plea agreement that would have allowed him to go home several months ago.
Yes.
And it would have been a time-served deal. He would not have had to deal with any more court. It's just basically the same deal that they offered Pete Santilli, which he accepted. But Ammon said, not a chance. It's not going to happen. I'm in the right, and I'm going to see this through. And
the popular slander against the Bundys is that they just didn't want to pay their fees, and they finally got caught.
Well,
and nothing could be further from the truth. They were standing on principles when they wouldn't pay their fees. And if that was the kind of people they would have caved in a long time ago with a plea bargain.
Oh, absolutely. And like I say, there was not even a bill for grazing fees sent to the Bundys.
Yeah,
the bill that they ended up getting was trespassing fees, and that was for less than $9,000 of the actual fines, not including, you know, all the additional administrative costs that they tack on, which only ended up being less than $300,000. It's nowhere near the million-plus that the mainstream media, you know, spouts.
That's right. And yet you see the mainstream media pull this up and say, these are millionaire ranchers. We know that's not the truth.
Not at all.
We know that they're working a very, very hard for a meager existence that most people in cities and suburbs would not accept that kind of hard work. They would not accept, they would not do the kind of work that pays that little. They did it because they wanted to be on the land, because they wanted to be farmers. It's just such a gross misrepresentation when you look at the way that it's been spun by the media. But let's talk a little bit about some of the other issues here, and that is one of the ones that you bring up in your article is the Bunkerville trial of the century finished. You talk about the long string of secret orders and sealed hearings and things that we're not even going to be allowed to see, presumably, even if they declare a mistrial, right? It'll still be sealed, right?
Well, the Constitution guarantees a public trial, and this has not really been that. There's been some days that we can go in there for a few hours, but they will turn around and shut down the trial for a sealed hearing. And most of the evidence is sealed. And I firmly believe they need to unseal everything. It's not just the grand jury testimony that's getting sealed. For example, there is a threat assessment out there that the world needs to read.
Mm-hmm.
They've referred to it many times in the court, but they aren't letting everybody read it. This threat assessment was done way back in, I'm guessing, maybe 2012, that said the Bundy family is not a threat. And that's the information they've used to keep them in jail, you know, lying to the court, saying, oh, of course they're a threat. They're a threat to the public. You know, they're dangerous. Well, they're not.
They're a threat to the government's lies is what they're a threat to.
Absolutely.
And it is a serious national security issue for them, because it threatens the way they do business, the way they control us. If they are exposed, it's a big threat to them. You know, my wife and I went to England a few years ago, probably 20 plus years ago. And we were, as part of our vacation, we're kind of nerds. So we decided that we would go to the Old Bailey Criminal Court and set in on a trial. And we did. And so we're sitting there. It's very interesting trying to piece together what was happening in this trial, because we kind of jumped in the middle of it. And then something came up about the CIA. And the judge says, clear the court, national security. We've got to get everybody out here. And you can kind of understand that. But this doesn't have any national security here. It has the security that the government is able to operate by hiding what they do and showing the tactics of what the government is doing. That's what they don't want to expose. There's nothing here that threatens our national security. It threatens their power over us if we know how they operate.
Absolutely. The majority of the evidence that's sealed just goes to show the government's bad acts.
That's absolutely amazing. Now, once they seal this, I'm not sure what will happen with this. As I said before, if they declare a mistrial with this, will the stuff that is currently sealed, will that remain sealed? Is it sealed only to the jury, only for this trial, or does it remain sealed after the trial?
That is something I can't answer. Not being an attorney, I don't know the procedures. I do know that there are some people who are actively working to get this unsealed. I don't know if they'll be successful.
Well, that's interesting, because people need to understand what is going on with this. I mean, we're still trying to unpack the injustice that was done to Ross Ulbricht with the Silk Road issue, and very similar in many ways to this. They had people in that particular case who had taken over the keys to that website and had stolen nearly $1 million. They were federal agents. The jury was not allowed to know that. That was exculpatory evidence that would have cleared him. They kept that away, and appeal courts kept that away. So when the government comes in and they want to get somebody and set them up for multiple life sentences for running a website because he was letting people buy and sell things that were prohibited by the government and using Bitcoin to do it anonymously, they made an example out of him, and they pulled all the strings to make this go through. The same thing is happening here with the Bundys, because the issue of land use and of property rights, you know, if they can take the property rights of ranchers who have grazing and water rights, or miners who have mineral rights, those are property rights, or loggers, those are property rights. And you can have all of those property rights on the same piece of land that none of them actually own the land. It could belong to the state or it could belong to the federal government, but they all have property rights. And those property rights are, in essence, the same as the deed to your home. If they can take away their property, they can take away your property as well. And they frequently do with eminent domain and other things. But the way they're doing it here is even more underhanded, isn't it, Sherry?
Absolutely it is. And they do have vested property rights out there with water rights, etc. The government doesn't want everybody to know that. They don't want everybody to know that part of the protest, for example, when Margaret Houston was thrown to the ground, she was trying to stop the truck that had all the water infrastructure in it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, they were out there destroying stuff. They were killing cattle. They were killing prize bulls and so forth. And their property rights, their grazing and water rights, went back to before the BLM ever existed, before Utah was even a state. That is the key thing. And we've seen the same thing happen with miners out in Oregon who had rights to mines that were out there before it was a state and before there was a BLM or a, you know, wildlife management or whatever that was coming at them at the time. So all of these property rights are being taken away by bureaucracies who are not held accountable, and we're not allowed to see what they're doing because they seal this stuff in court.
Absolutely. The government is kind of run amok here. They want everybody off the land. Hoggers, farmers, miners, we're all going to have to go if they get...
And homeowners in your suburbs, you're the next ones if you don't stand up for these principles. Thank you so much for joining us, Sherry, especially as your daughter is about to have her first baby. Merry Christmas to you, and congratulations, and thank you for taking time away to talk to us about this.
Thank you, David. Merry Christmas to everyone.
Thank you. Sherry Duvalle, Readout News.
The two of us can get together. There's nothing sweeter, finer, when it's nice and cold. I can't hold my baby closer.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight on this December the 12th. We're only, well, not even 2 weeks. So it was 2 weeks yesterday that Christmas begins. We now have a massive Christmas sale at InfoWarsStore.com. We put some of our most popular items, BrainForce, BrainForce, Silver Bullet, and the toothpaste that we have here, our Super Blue fluoride-free toothpaste. I'll have a lot of products that I use here at InfoWars, but those are my favorite. I can really feel the difference with BrainForce. I've been able to stop infections with Silver Bullet, and I use the toothpaste every day. It's the best toothpaste I've ever used. We've got all of those, along with even Select Survival Food, back on sale at InfoWarsStore.com. Here's some of the items that we have 50% off right now at InfoWarsStore.com. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, our multivitamin, multi-mineral formula. You don't have to take a lot of pills to get a baseline of vitamins and minerals. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off. Super Blue Fluoride-Free Toothpaste and Mouthwash, 50% off. Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid, 50% off. Survival Shield, our nascent iodine, 50% off. Super Male Vitality, 50% off. Alpha Power, our introductory price, 50% off. And Prostaguard, 50% off. You can also get DNA Force, 33% off. And that is a big dollar saving. So take a look at the sales we have at InfoWarsStore.com, part of our Merry Christmas sale. We really do appreciate your support. And it's a great way to support the health of your family as well. Let's talk about the news media's attacks and how they are absolutely shameless. We were just talking before in the last hour about Glenn Greenwald. Anybody who is halfway objective is absolutely amazed at what's going on here. So the U.S. media just suffered its most humiliating debacle in ages. And of course, he had also tweeted out, how did multiple sources all misread the date on this fake CNN story and leave it there for 12 hours? Saying that, this was something that happened. He was had contacts with WikiLeaks before this was made public, and they're conspiring. He said, I never saw that email. And, oh, by the way, the email was a day after it was tweeted around the world. Everybody knew about all that stuff. It was just a heads up from somebody sending Donald Trump Jr. Information about, hey, you can. There's a lot of stuff that's just been put out by WikiLeaks. You ought to take a look at this. And, oh, there, that proves our case. Russian collusion. Yeah, okay. And Glenn Greenwald's like, how could they, what's their rationale for continuing to conceal the identity of these sources who caused so much damage and so much deceit on the public with their false claims? So it's not just a mistake. It's malicious. And that's what Sarah Huckabee Sanders was pointing out to CNN's Jim Acosta. He's, we all make mistakes. We all make mistakes. Well, let's talk about what they did with this. NTK Network points out that CNN covered its fake news story about Donald Trump Jr., the one I just talked to you about, 27 times more than it did its retraction. CNN dedicated 30% of its on-air programming to the fake Donald Trump Jr. story, compared to just 1% of its on-air programming to the retraction. They also discussed the incorrect story 19 times before the Washington Post came out and said, hey, folks, this is false. And so that equates to almost 4 times each hour. And then they mentioned the retraction just once that entire day. How about that? So we're talking about it 4 times an hour, 19 times. And then finally, the Washington Post comes out and says it's fake. They say it once, and that's it. And now they're done. They're done. That's kind of like assassinating somebody's character and then printing a retraction on page 15 of the newspaper after you've been defaming them on the front page for a very long time. But, of course, the never-Trumpers, the people like David Frum, who was a former speechwriter for George W. Bush, all these people who have been gunning for President Trump and are still gunning for him. Let's make no mistake about that. They're not done. They're not done with any of this stuff. They're never going to give up with the Russia stuff. They're never going to give up with the sexual harassment charges. They're going to keep coming. And here's what David Frum, who's now the editor for The Atlantic, had to say. Let's play that clip.
David, what's your advice for journalists in this situation and for readers?
More advice for readers. You asked the question, Brian, why should, given these mistakes, why should people trust the media? And I would say the mistakes are precisely the reason that people should trust the media. Look, astronomers make mistakes all the time because science is a process of discovery of truth. Astrologers never make mistakes, or at least they never own up to them, because what they're offering is a closed system of ideology and propaganda.
Okay, so let's take that analogy, the difference between astronomers and astrologers. Maybe we should take that analogy and say that meteorologists make mistakes all the time, and they own up to them, and they change their models, but climatologists never make mistakes. They never acknowledge their mistakes. But what he is saying is the mistakes are precisely the reason that people should trust the media. Just hold that there. Hold that cognitive dissonance. Hold that Orwellian thought. 2 + 2 = 5, and you should trust us because we tell you 2 + 2 = 5. Or we tell you that war is peace. That's why you should trust us. That's why we're the most trusted name in media. And that's why the Bush establishment cannot be trusted. Yeah, journalism is a process. They don't ever say that when it is somebody else that is telling something in a malicious way. See, that's the difference. It isn't a question of an honest mistake. And this is where this is always going back to. Sarah Huckabee Sanders would not let Jim Acosta get away with that. It was not an honest mistake. It was an attempt at a coup. It was not just character assassination. It was an attempt at a coup. They put that out there. I just read to you the difference between how many times they talked about this incessantly and a little bit, oh, okay, we made a mistake. Let's move on. Let's not dwell on that. Yeah, you know, mistakes are made. It's not fake. Mistakes are made. And then you have CNN walking back the Jeff Sessions Russia bombshell. This is another one now. Okay. There's so many CNN fake news stories and NBC and others that it's, you get them all confused. And you look at this and it's like, oh, okay, they're walking back another. I've already seen that article. No, this is a different one. This is a different one. Remember that they had put back a long time ago, back in May, that reported that Jeff Sessions had, as a senator, talked to the Russian ambassador. What a, there you go. There's the Russian collusion right there. Well, that happens all the time. Happens all the time. And you'll find that even their beloved icons like Chucky Schumer and so forth, they talk to foreign ambassadors as well as senators. It happens all the time. There's nothing criminal, nothing suspicious about it. There's no crime, but they tried to make it into a crime because it isn't even about a mistake. It's malicious. It's character assassination to try to get a coup. And when this came out back in May, Jeff Sessions said, I didn't disclose this because I was told by the FBI not to disclose it. It's nothing unusual. Oh, well, we don't believe him. We don't believe him, they said. And they kept reporting it. And other mainstream media jumped on it because they were eager to have something with which they could assassinate character and push a coup. However, they admitted yesterday that the FBI emails prove that Attorney General Sessions' explanation for the non-disclosure is accurate. You're not going to see this put out there very much either. This is what they had to say. A newly released document shows that the FBI told an aide to Attorney General Jeff Sessions that Sessions wasn't required to disclose foreign contacts that occurred in the course of carrying out his government duties when he was a senator. That was written by CNN's Evan Perez in a new piece on Monday. So after, you want to talk about the fake news about Donald Trump Jr. going out on Friday and they leave that and run with it for 12 hours? Here's a story about Jeff Sessions that they've left out there for 7 months since May. Here we are in December and they quietly put out a retraction. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. He was a senator and he's talking to a Russian ambassador. There's nothing unusual about that. The FBI said, you don't need to list that because that happens all the time. It's not even unusual. There certainly isn't criminal. So you don't have to disclose that. And then we look at what they did with the tweet that happened right after that, where the Washington Post, who had just pointed out how CNN was lying about Donald Trump Jr., Washington Post puts out an article from a guy showing that on Friday night, as President Trump was campaigning for Roy Moore in Florida, Pensacola, Florida, just over the border from Alabama, they said, look, nobody showed up. And it was hours before the rally. And of course, there were a lot of people at the rally, so they're putting out all these different pictures at the rally. So it was a lie that he couldn't stick to. His name is Dave Weigel. And he says, packed to the rafters, ha, 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 as he puts out his fake news picture of an empty stadium. But it really was full. There was actually 13,500 people in a 12,000 capacity arena. And there was overflow on the floor. And so, was this just a mistake? No, he has a long history of this stuff. The journalists said, how dare you say this guy ought to be fired? It was an honest mistake. No, it wasn't. It wasn't. When we come back from the news, I'll tell you the long history that this guy has of attacking Republicans and lying about it. He was even fired by the Washington Post, of all people. The lowest journalistic standards you find anywhere. They actually fired him, but then they rehired him so he could go after Trump. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm David Knight.
Through the electronic Berlin Wall of disinformation, it's your host, live and uncensored, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. We've been talking about not just the fake news, and it isn't a mistake news. It's malicious news that's coming out here. And one of the examples of this, and President Trump was scoriated on social media for saying, hey, you ought to fire this guy from the Washington Post for putting out this thing about the crowds, this fake news about the crowds. And yet this guy has a very long history of doing exactly this sort of thing. he was fired by the Washington Post in 2010. He had put out a lot of information. He had attacked Matt Drudge, saying that he should, quote, handle his emotional problems more responsibly and set himself on fire. He went after Rush Limbaugh and said Rush Limbaugh should die after he was hospitalized with chest pains. He wrote, I hope he fails, according to the Daily Caller. He was hired by the Washington Post in 2010 to blog about conservatives, to be an attack dog for conservatives. And he resigned after only 3 months. His resignation came after he had posted personal caustic emails on an off-the-record listserv about Ron Paul and also Rush Limbaugh. Among the leaked comments was that Paul, elected in the 2010 Tea Party wave, was part of the Paultard Tea Party. But then he got very personal with Matt Drudge, with Rush Limbaugh and so forth. So they fired him. But then they hired him again in 2015. Why? Because you want to have somebody like that who is going to be a vicious attack dog in time for the elections coming up. You know, they knew there was going to be a party. They knew that there wasn't going to be a incumbent running again for the Democrats. So it was Barack Obama was being term limited out. So the Republicans had a fighting chance because they weren't running against an incumbent. So they need to bring in some guy that is an attack dog like Dave Weigel. And you can see the kind of reporting that he does. Let's play this clip again from this is from MSNBC talking about how these are just honest mistakes by the press.
Clear about something. Reporters make mistakes. We're human. Sometimes our sources aren't as good as they should be. Sometimes speak too soon. Sometimes we mess up. And when the mistake is serious enough, we are suspended or we're fired. The president and this White House have misled the American public multiple times, from things as innocuous as crowd size to retweeting misleading videos meant to sow division and fuel fear. Hello, Britain First. In fact, the New York Times has compiled a handy list of 1,628 false claims the president has made since taking office. That is 5.5 false statements or lies per day. We're waiting for the apology on all of those.
Yeah, and we're waiting for your culpability on all of those, too, as well. You're still talking about President Trump's tweets about crowd size, which, by the way, we're not disproving. But the fake news here, as President Trump says, he's lying about these crowd sizes and he's doing it to attack me. You ought to get rid of people like that so that you could get your reputation back. Instead, the journalists, instead of saying, as Glenn Greenwald did, hey, let's get our credibility back. Let's stop melting down over this. Instead, they all double down and they attack President Trump. And they're still talking about the crowd dispute for the inauguration. And then it gets into the trivial nonsense. We got CNN airing a segment on President Trump's supposed Diet Coke intake. And we don't even know if he's doing that. But this is where they're hanging out now. Maybe that's a little bit safer for them. So they're going to speculate on what this does to his body and to his brain every day. Well, you know what? The Diet Coke is not good for you. And so President Trump, if he's listening, or Roger Stone, maybe you should, next time you talk to him, tell him if he is, in fact, drinking Diet Coke. And we don't know that he is, because this is just coming from CNN, who believes whatever they have to say. But don't drink Diet Coke, period, let alone a large amount of it. We need you healthy. We need you combating these people. And we want to see the wheels fall off, as they have been, and they continue to accelerate doing that. Stay with us. Coming up in this hour, we're going to be talking to Joseph Farah about more fake news, about polar bears this time, and global warming.
You found it. It's the real news. From the Infowars.com studios in Austin, Texas, it's your host, David Knight.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight. Well, today is the decision day in the Alabama Senate race. I guess you could say the case is now with the jury, because they're going to be voting today. We're going to have the, we'll be following this tonight. I'll be tweeting about it on Libertarian, my Twitter account. But Roy Moore came out and said in his final Alabama rally, and of course it was a rally last night with President Trump there. He's also recorded robo-messages for Roy Moore. Obama's been recording messages for Doug Jones. Good luck with that. He's not very popular in Alabama. But Roy Moore came out and said, if you don't believe in my character, don't vote for me. Don't vote for me. So we'll see what happens. Now, it's not just his credibility that's on the line. It's also the credibility of some people like Fox News, for example. They've got a poll that comes out. It's an outlier. As you've got other polls showing a big lead, some of them up to 10 points with Roy Moore in the lead, they show just the opposite. They show Roy Moore losing by 10 points. And so Breitbart's headline is, the credibility of Fox News is on the line, with a poll that shows Jones up by 10%, 50% to 40%. They said earlier on the same day, yesterday, Emerson poll was released that shows Moore up by 9 points, 53 to 44. So exactly the opposite. And there were five other recent polls featured in Real Clear Politics, average of polls, that all show Moore in the lead. So the interesting thing is, how do we get these radical differences here? You know, most people don't believe that Fox poll. Nobody is talking about it except to say, this is a trick. The Democrats think it's a trick to discourage Democrats from showing up to vote. Republicans think that it is another push poll to discourage people from showing up to vote. But nobody believes it. And here's why they don't believe it. If you take a look at the data, you find that in a heavily Republican state like Alabama, this Fox poll only looked at a 2-point difference in Republicans. And as this article points out, Trump defeated Hillary Clinton by a margin of 28 points, 63 to 35. If you go back to the primary, you see that Trump defeated Ted Cruz in Alabama by 22 points. And if you look at the number of people that voted in the primaries, Republican voters versus Democrat voters in the primaries, where you could say that in some cases, even though it's not the general election, you still had more choices on the ballot. In other words, it was still a hot race between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders on the Democrat side. And yet you had 2.5 times more GOP voters than Democrat voters. So what does Fox News do? They take 2 points more. Not 2.5 times, but just 2 points more of Republicans in their poll. So I don't think that that's going to be very accurate. But when you look at what happens with Fox News, and you look at Frank Luntz, when he does his little, it's one of the most annoying things to watch what he does during the debates, the way Fox News uses Frank Luntz. Whenever you see Frank Luntz do something with his focus groups, and they sit there with their little knobs, turning the knobs as they watch it. It's like, oh, look at this. Right here at this point where this candidate said that word, boy, look at the response, just go off the chart, either positive or negative. And then, what did you think about this? And, well, did you think? And who are these people that he brings in? Nobody ever really kind of controls Frank Luntz. He is a good example of fake news. It is usually with Fox News. Now, he did something for Vice on Friday with a focus group of Republicans, and I want you to watch this because I read some quotes from it yesterday, but unless you actually watch it, you don't really get a feel for how Frank Luntz was pushing this and using these people to push a narrative. He was berating them for supporting Roy Moore and continued to challenge them with all the typical establishment talking points. Here's that Frank Luntz poll that he was taking with the voters.
Are you all Christians here?
Yes.
Oh, you're Christian. How could you support this guy?
Is Roy Moore a good Christian?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Absolutely?
Yes.
Without any doubt whatsoever.
I can know necessarily.
Let me ask you this.
Nobody's perfect. Please explain nobody's perfect when you look at the things that he has been accused of.
Hold it right there. See, this is the way that they get people. Well, he was just accused, so therefore he's guilty, right? There's never any presumption of innocence. It isn't. The question was not, do you believe these charges? The question from Frank Luntz was a little bit more clever than that. The question from Frank Luntz was, are you Christians? Well, then how could you believe somebody who is accused of something like this? They should have asked Frank Luntz, have you seen the yearbook, Frank? Did Gloria Allred let you look at that yearbook? Do you understand where that signature came from? Do you understand the significance of DA, which he never was a district attorney? He was a deputy district attorney. That was the initials of the guy that worked for him who signed Beverly Young Nelson's divorce decree. But let's go back to the video here.
Because I don't go to church every time the doors are open doesn't mean I don't believe. And God doesn't expect us to be perfect, but he does expect us to try and repent of our sins.
But again, he turned it into an assumption of guilt.
Because I like him, I'm voting for him because I don't want Doug Jones. But Roy Moore is entitled to the presumption of innocence in the law and in the Bible, just like anybody else should be. There are only accusations. There have been no charges filed. All you have is a group of women that have come forward and said...
How many?
Seven.
More.
Yeah, there's really three.
Higher.
Hold it right there. Hold it right there. Again. Throwing a lot of weight out there, and that was a thing that from the very beginning made these charges non-credible from the Washington Post. The fact that they would have one serious allegation and they would find it necessary, because they didn't believe that that allegation was credible enough, that they would find it necessary to conflate a serious charge with a lot of things that weren't crimes at all. Even one of the women, who was a Democrat operative at the time, said my mother wanted me to date him, said I'd be lucky to date him. Is it a crime to ask women out and then to go away when they say no? It conflicted with the character that they were trying to show there. Don't you see that there is a pattern? Certainly many of us do. We see a pattern in the behavior of people like Bill Cosby. Doesn't he come after women the same way? Or Harvey Weinstein. Oh, come up to my hotel room. Oh, would you give me a massage here? I just happened to be coming out of the shower and so forth. There's a pattern in all these other accusations that the women come up with. But there wasn't a pattern in the Roy Moore accusation. They felt that they needed to pad it. And here's how you got Frank Luntz putting this out there. Oh, there were nine women. No, there weren't. There were two women who had serious motivations. One of them has been exposed as a fraud and a forger, admitted it. The other one had a very serious beef with Roy Moore, and it was just a he said, she said. There was one serious accusation and a lot of non-serious accusations that were thrown in there by the Washington Post and by Frank Luntz to try to make the other ones look credible. Let's continue.
Come forward before you say, wait a minute, where there's smoke, there's fire.
It doesn't matter about legitimacy, not just how many.
Exactly.
How many are actually not being paid or being coerced to do this?
How many of them do you think are being paid?
All of them.
All of them?
All of them.
By show of hands, how many of you think all the women are being paid? Seriously.
To me, there are only two women that maybe have a smoking gun, but you know, the women's reputations were questionable at the time.
Is this how you want to be treated as a woman if something were to happen to you? Do you want to be dismissed?
Is this how you
want
to be treated, Frank, if somebody were to accuse you?
You know, it doesn't sound like it went beyond their still clothes on. It doesn't sound like it went beyond anything, and that as soon as the girl said she wasn't comfortable, he took her home.
I guess my question is, you blame her. She's 14.
I'm not blaming her. I'm blaming both of them. So I didn't say that I thought he was without sin. It's possible he did it, but it's possible that he could be forgiven for... I don't think he raped her.
And let's be real. It was a different world. 40 years ago in Alabama, people could get married at 13 and 14 years old. My grandmother at 13 was married at 15, had two children and a husband and a job. If Roy Moore was guilty, if he was at the mall hitting on this 14-year-old, 40 years ago in Alabama, there's a lot of mamas and daddies that'd be thrilled that their 14-year-old was getting hit on by a district attorney.
Matter of fact, so was one of the women who talked about this.
I dated an older woman.
There you go. He finds Alabama voters deplorable. So I guess you should all just run for cover because Frank Luntz doesn't like your decision. Stay with us. We'll be right back with Joseph Farah of WND. I'm David Knight, and we're going to be talking to Joseph Farah. Of course, he is the founder, editor, and CEO of WND. You can find it at WND.com. He's also an author, The Tea Party Manifesto, and his classic Taking Back America, now in its third edition and 14th printing. You can also find him on Twitter at Joseph Farah. And Mr. Farah had an article on WND about the polar bear story that just broke this last week. And we've seen so many pictures in the past of polar bears on icebergs, and the narrative is, look at this, the ice has broken off and they're going to drown. You know, they have a very long range, as we pointed out. They travel like 300 miles a day. They can swim quite well. And I remember a few years ago doing some of these reports, and I even had a polar bear that was standing up on a on an ice floe, and I animated his arm as he's waving to the crowd. But now we've got a new polar bear story. We've got a starving polar bear, and that is proof, isn't it, Mr. Farah, of global warming, they tell us.
Unbelievable, David. Thank you for having me, by the way.
Well, thank you for coming.
I was, you know, checking out the news, and everywhere I ran into this polar bear story. And, you know, it's one of those things that's meant to, you know, capture your heart, because you see an animal obviously suffering from some kind of malady. And, you know, one of the environmentalist groups sent some photographers up and video people to find something like this. And, you know, they were lucky enough to find a polar bear that is evidently dying in the last stages of life. Well, you know, the polar bears live and die in the wild. They don't live more than 15 years. So they went up to this Canadian island to find polar bears, and they ran into this one that's got something wrong with him. And by the way, he's not just starving. He's got something wrong with his back legs. He or she, I don't know which one it is.
Probably why he's starving, because he can't catch what he needs to eat.
Yeah, and the problem, of course, is that there's no ice up there. And it's summertime, of course, so naturally the ice is at a minimum. But this is really a fake news story. And I want to read you a few of the headlines I saw this weekend, and there's more today, and I predicted this would be going on all week long. The New York Times is catching up with it this week and so forth. But these are some of the headlines.
There'll be a documentary by Al Gore, I'm sure.
This starving polar bear should prove to all climate change deniers that they're delusional and disgusting. That from the group. This is from Cosmopolitan. The haunting video of a dying polar bear will break your heart and hopefully make you believe in climate change. I mean, they're not pulling any punches here, okay? They're telling us why this one polar bear is important. Now, polar bears, as I said, in the wild, they live no more than 15 years. In captivity, they can live for 45 years because, you know, people come and bring them food. They don't have to work so hard.
Maybe they got Obamacare, you know, that's
exactly. You know, it raises the question, what did this crew that was up there do about this starving polar? And the answer is nothing. Well, we didn't have, you know, enough meat to feed the polar bear. And, you know, obviously,
we could have fed him the gaffer there.
You know, when you see an animal suffering, what do you do? I mean, yeah. You know, you should put it out of its misery. Probably the best idea, but they didn't do that either, because this polar bear is worth so much to the climate change cartel out there that's trying to reinvent the economic system of the entire world based on the production of carbon dioxide. So that's the latest on that story. And you know,
they've got a new mascot now, don't they, Joseph? They got Polar the Bear. You know, just like we have Smokey the Bear for the forest fires. Only you can prevent climate change, you know, feed this bear.
It's about manipulating people emotionally. And it doesn't get more blatant than this. Anybody who knows anything about polar bears understands what's going on. You find a dying polar bear and you attribute it to global warming. Probably has nothing to do with that whatsoever. But that's bizarre story of the week, in my estimation.
And but of course, we go back and we look at climate change, the Paris Climate Accord, that had nothing to do with global warming either, and the UN even admitted that. They come back and they say, well, you know, we're going to let some of the dirtiest polluters like India and China continue to build these dirtiest power plants, and they're going to be allowed to do that for another decade or so. Then we'll level off, and then after a long extended period of time, we'll start to cut them. But we're going to cut you right away. So if it's a global problem, how does that make any sense? But they pointed out that even if that had passed, And even with, if everybody had done everything they said they were going to do, it still wouldn't have satisfied the people who were pushing this man-made climate change. It was simply to reorder our economies and to take away our sovereignty.
Let me give you another example right out of the news. This weekend and into this week, you know, the California fires are raging. What did Jerry Brown, the governor of California, attribute this to? The Paris Climate Accord and there you Trump, go. You know, getting rid of it. This is just unbelievable. I had to do a column on that. I've lived in California for 20 years. A lot of people think I'm still there, but you know, I wrote this column, 9 reasons about why California fires are burn every single year. The climate hasn't changed in California. I lived there throughout the 1980s. Everything you see happening today was happening then. It's a little bit more serious today only because more people have moved into California, mostly immigrants, by the way. Mm-hmm. And so you've got more development. You've got development in canyons and mountainsides that burn. If they don't burn every year, they burn every other year or, you know, every 3 years. It just happens that way because it's a desert after all. You know, Southern California, like it or not, is a desert with hardly any rainfall 6 months of the year. So these things happen, but you cannot blame global warming or climate change. Nothing has really changed. The temperatures aren't higher in California, except, by the way, in urban areas where you've got a lot of asphalt being poured and a lot of concrete. You know, if you take temperatures in urban areas, they're always higher than in rural areas, even urban areas. And this is where, of course, the climate change activists want to measure the temperatures, okay? But it's not a reflection on the global temperatures at all.
Well, you know, the same thing happens in Florida as well, because we've had everybody get upset about the hurricanes and say, oh, look at this is climate change again, even though there was a long period where it was very unusual that there weren't hurricanes. But it's also the number of people moving in make it appear to be much worse than it has in the past. Just like California has fires, Florida has hurricanes. I lived there for a long period of time. And this fire that's going on in California is as bad as it is. As of yesterday, it was only the 5th largest fire that they've had there. So it's not even unprecedented in that respect.
You know, there have been catastrophic fires in California back in one of the worst ones that took place in the 1930s. Okay. Is that global warming, too? I mean, you have to. This, again, it's emotional manipulation. And what is the, I think the thing that distresses me the most is the way the media,
another example of fake media and using this in a weaponized way for their political agenda. It isn't just a mistake. They're not stupid. They know exactly what they're doing. We're going to talk to Joseph Fair when we come back, WND, and he knows what they're up to as well. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
He's not sorry when snowflakes can't handle the truth. It's your host, David Knight.
Trying to make some sense of it all, but I can see it makes no sense at all.
Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we're talking to Joseph Farah of WND.com about the clowns on the left of us who are trying to feed this narrative. They're so desperate to get you to truly believe. I do believe in spooks, right? Come at the Wizard of Oz. They want you to believe based on the polar bear that they saw dying, as Joseph Fair pointed out in his column. Would they have done something if they could to help this polar bear? Did they see any healthy polar bears? Would they have been upset if they'd found a healthy polar bear? Would they even tell us if they'd found a healthy polar bear? And now they're on California. And of course, as somebody who lived there, he's got another column, 9 real reasons why California burns. The thing at the bottom of your column here, the last paragraph, Joseph, says, by the way, I left California for good after 20 years, not because of the fires, not because of the heat, not because of the winter mudslides that follow the fires. I left because of the catastrophic shift and the cultural and political climate in 1999. That's what we're really seeing here, isn't it?
Never look back either, David. I actually remember the moment, and I'll tell you a quick story. It was I left in 1999. We just had an election there, elected Gray Davis to be the governor. And I had watched Gray Davis, his political history throughout my 20 years there. And I knew that this guy, even though people thought he was sort of a moderate Democrat, was not anything like that. He was radical left. And when he was elected, I said, wow, this is the end. You know, California used to elect Republican conservative governors like Reagan and Duke Manchin. Yeah. And so this was going to be a real sea shift. And I said, we got to get out of here. We didn't have any plans to leave, my wife and I and our family. And we decided, well where do we want to go? We probably should be going to Washington, where we have been for the last, 20 years. But we had to make an escape fast. And so we just went over the border to Southern Oregon, and we lived there for a couple of years and then decided. But I predicted, when Gray Davis was elected, I said, and I told people, I said, you're going to see the electrical grid failures with this guy, because I knew his environmental record. And it's exactly mm-hmm. what we saw. Like within a year, we saw those. Remember those brownouts?
Yeah.
And the electrical failure that led directly to Arnold Schwarzenegger getting elected eventually as governor. He wasn't.
And now you got Governor Jerry Brownout, who is there.
But you know, this is like going. This is, you know, Back to the Future with Jerry Brown. I mean, this guy who was kind of a child prodigy governor when he was elected the first time. He's now this senior citizen, and it's just so pathetic. He hasn't changed a bit. And you know, California. I mean, you kind of get what you deserve, and that's what's happening with their politics. I mean, they've gone so far left. You know, we used to look at Europe to see where we'd be going. Well, you know, California is at the vanguard of that revolution, that leftist revolution at this point.
Oh, yeah. Things go from Europe or from the UK into California, and then they metastasize in the rest of the United States. But you're talking about losing the electrical grid. That's literally mm-hmm. happened down in Australia, the place where you just had Elon Musk go down there and make a big deal of saying, hey, I'll get these batteries installed for you in a certain amount of time, or you don't have to pay me, right? Well, he knew he was going to get it done in that amount of time. But the real story that most people didn't talk about was the fact that they had completely had blackouts there because they had rejected all of the fossil fuel power plants there and gone totally with renewable energy, which guess what? You know, windmills and solar power don't work on a grid. They're great for getting you off the grid, but you have to have steady state power on the grid, which means you've got to have a big battery network. So he goes down there and makes a big deal of the fact that he can run 2,000 homes with those batteries for a day when they've got about 600,000 homes that need to be powered. That's where California is headed, with that same kind of religious fervor of sustainability, renewability type of thing.
Right. And after years of decommissioning their nuclear power plants, which would have served mm-hmm. the state well during those periods, but they're gone one by one. So, you know, California is, you know, it might as well have been, you know, gone into the ocean like we had feared, you know, many years ago. it's drowning in a sea of, you know, liberalism at this point.
Yeah. Well, it has gone off the rails, and you're talking about the political and cultural climate that is there. So now we've got Jerry Brown out, and he's talking about these fires, and he's saying that it's all Trump's fault, and he doesn't have the fear of the Lord. Coming from Jerry Brown, I mean, did he have a come-to-Jesus moment as the governor of Sodom and Gomorrah? What's going on here?
He did go to seminary, didn't he, for a little while?
That's right, I guess, yeah. Was that the same one the Pope went to? I don't know.
Right. Well, you know, there's another thing going on right now. I want to plug a story that we have in WND, and you know, because it, you know, this Mueller probe. Look, all of this comes down to people are out to get Trump, who actually represents kind of a real change in the political culture, unprecedented, really, in modern history. Even more so, I think, than the Reagan Revolution of the 80s. So this Mueller probe is like their last hope for reversing the election of 2016. And I talk to people all the time, and they don't really understand. It's a complicated story, and there's developments every single day. And so I asked our team, in particular, a great reporter, Chelsea Schilling, to do kind of a catch-up story with the essentials of it. And you know, the headline is Understand Stakes of Mueller Probe. If not, read this. And it's so important for people to understand the threat that this represents to Donald Trump, and more importantly, you know, the attempts to preserve, you know, this deep state system that has developed in America for so long. And, you know, the key to this thing, if I could just call out one thing that's essential to understand, we've got a special counsel, unlimited funds, unlimited time, unlimited scope. And what they are doing is they're investigating, but there's no crime. As far as I know, in the history of American jurisprudence, there has never been a special counsel appointed when there wasn't at least a crime that took place of some kind. And yet we don't know.
This is like Stalin, you know, bring me the man, I'll find the crime. They're still looking for a crime to be committed.
And so you need to read this story, because what you see on CNN every day and NBC Nightly News, you know, they're on the verge of discovering something. And, you know, the charges that have been brought have no connection with what the investigation was supposed to be about in the beginning, the whole Russian collusion thing. There's no Russian collusion. There's no Russian conspiracy with Trump. None of that has manifested itself in this investigation. But they're still just broadening, widening the investigation every chance they get, hiring more investigators. And this is, you know, just simply not the American way.
Well, there's no controlling legal authority here, as Al Gore would say, because the special prosecutor law expired in 1999. They let it expire because they said, look, this is going to turn into a witch hunt to come after one individual. But even if when they had that law, they had a procedure. They said you have to present evidence of a crime to the attorney general. And then he has a 3-judge panel and they will appoint a special prosecutor and he'll report back to them what he finds and so forth. And you can't go in another direction without repeating this process and showing evidence of a crime. That law doesn't exist anymore. So there's absolutely no control and no rules over this guy. He can do whatever he wants for as long as he wants.
Right. So the question we have to ask ourselves every single day when we see the news reports about this investigation, this special counsel investigation, and what Mueller's team is doing is, what are they investigating at this point? And what evidence have they found there is any crime? And at this point, I don't think any of us know, except I think we suspect that there is no crime, especially anything even remotely associated with Trump's dealings with Russia during the campaign or thereafter.
Well, I think the crimes that need to be investigated are the ones that these people who are doing the investigation now probably committed with Hillary Clinton. But maybe we shouldn't even call it special prosecutor since we don't have a law. Maybe we ought to call it the imaginary prosecutor since he can imagine anything and go after it. We'll be right back with Joseph Farah. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm David Knight, and we've been talking to Joseph Farah of WND.com. Of course, he's the founder, CEO, and editor of WND. We're going to get back to him and talk about President Trump's accomplishments. You know, we look at the persecution of President Trump with the special persecutor that has been appointed. But it's time for us to take a look, as we get to the end of the year here, at President Trump's accomplishments. And they have a great article about that listing, 162 Trump accomplishments in just 300 plus days. And there's still time to get a lot more done at the end of the year. Before we go back to Mr. Farah, real quickly, I want to remind you of some of the specials we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We've started our Merry Christmas sale, and we have a lot of our most popular items like Brain Force Plus, Silver Bullet, and InfoWars Life Select Survival Food are all back on sale. And we also have 50% off a wide variety of products. Let me list some of those for you. Vitamin Mineral Fusion Drink Mix, 50% off. Super Blue Fluoride Free Products, that's our toothpaste, mouthwash. Knockout, our all-natural sleep aid. Survival Shield X2, that's our nascent iodine. Super Male Vitality. Alpha Power is at an introductory 50% off, and Prostaguard, all those 50% off, and you can also get DNA Force 33% off. Take a look at the sales at InfoWarsStore.com, part of our massive Christmas savings, and we really do appreciate your support. All right, Mr. Farah, let's talk a little bit about the positive side of what's happened in this last year. I mean, it's absolutely amazing to look what what President Trump has gotten done, and then also kind of hold in your mind what would have happened if we'd gone the other way and Hillary Clinton was in charge. I don't even want to go there. Let's just stay positive and talk about President Trump's accomplishments.
I think the stunning thing about what he's done is he has faced so much adversity, so much opposition, and yet he has actually achieved remarkable things, remarkable accomplishments in less than in his first year. And we're coming up on the anniversary, January 20th. And, you know, I started thinking about this last summer because the things he was doing were actually incredibly courageous, things that I never thought we would see again in American history. It would take another kind of Reagan revolution to see it. And he is actually, and again, I have to say, surpassed some of the expectations even Reagan fulfilled. But, you know, just look in the last month, you know, we talk about the jobs creation that's going on, but you talk about courage. What he did with, you know, overturning Obama's transgender thing in the military. What does this have to do with, you know, fighting wars and defending this country? And of course, there's always a judge that's going to try to block whatever he does. Let's look at the Israel declaration from last week. You know, how many presidents have had the opportunity to do this? This has been congressional law for a long time. And everyone just wants to pass the buck, keep pushing it down the road. Trump did it.
And I think that also highlights the honesty and directness of Trump, the authenticity, if you will, what people talk about now.
Yes.
Because think about the fact, and we've seen the clips of Bill Clinton when he's campaigning, how emphatic he was of what he was going to do for the people who wanted to see that happen. And we see this on the right as well, when they promise us Obamacare. We're going to get rid of it. You just vote for us again, and we'll get rid of it. Get more Republicans, and we'll get rid of it. And they never deliver on these promises that they make to a particular base. It's very cynical what they do. And then they double down on this cynicism is fair because you had people like Dianne Feinstein and Bernie Sanders, who just as recently as June voted to do this same thing, 90-0, the Senate voted. And now they're coming after President Trump for doing what they had voted for. And that's the cynical lying that you typically see out of Washington. That's why CNN called him the promise keeper. And of course, they hate the promises that he's keeping, but he is a promise keeper.
Yeah, and so, you know, the thought occurred to me probably, you know, midsummer was, okay, he's got all this opposition. He's achieving great things. He's popular with his base. What can we do to encourage him? You know, because if you don't encourage anyone, a leader like Donald Trump, who's doing this stuff, who's getting the job done, you know, we know what happens in the Beltway culture. I don't think there's any threat with Trump that he's going to be absorbed by that. He went there. He's been like a human wrecking ball of the deep state. That's what we love about him. But how many of us have actually expressed in some meaningful way our thanks for what he's doing, our desire to stand behind him and support him? And that's
he really does feed off of that, because you watch how he has to get out of Washington and he has these rallies, which are really unprecedented. I mean, even with Barack Obama, when you have the big rallies, he was riding the coattails of very famous bands. But President Trump goes out and talks off the cuff for an hour and a half to a crowd of 20,000-30,000 people or more, depending on the venue, and they love it. And that's we've never seen that before in politics, but he does feed off of that. You know, the old saying in Washington, if you want a friend, get a dog. Well, he doesn't have any pets, but he does have these crowds that he can go out and have rallies to. So that is something that would make a big difference to him.
Yeah, so I came up with this thanktrump.us campaign where you can sit at home. You don't have to go to a rally, although do it if you get the opportunity. He's not going to be able to do as many rallies as President of the United States as he did during the campaign. So how do we thank him? You go to thanktrump.us, you send them a digital card. We worked very hard on getting this system set up. You got a choice of 10 cards now, 10 different messages, and you can even personalize them and send them to the White House. And,
that's cool.
You know, I really want to see this thing explode. We started around Thanksgiving. It's been with the help of Alex Jones and others, we've been able to get this thing moving. But it's got to be more people have got to know about this. So if you like the idea, take part and let people know about ThankTrump.us. Us. And this is, I believe, a tangible way for us to all express our gratitude for what Trump has done in his first year. By the way, one of the things we do is we keep the most comprehensive record of Trump's achievements, even more comprehensive than the White House's, because we looked at theirs and we got more than they do. So go there and take a look at all that material and take part in thanktrump.us.
You know, I think that's something that he'll really appreciate as well. You know, he's the kind of president that he likes that kind of feedback. Yeah,
but I'm hoping for some tweets real soon. Maybe you guys can help.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think he really will appreciate that. And, you know, talk about all the different things that he's done. I mean, we saw immediately that he walked back TPP as he had promised. Yes. It took a while longer to get some of the other things because he had a lot of even internal opposition to things like the Paris Climate Agreement. But he did the right thing. And even though he had family members who were putting a lot of pressure on him and everything, he still held to that. He still kept his promise there. And as I mentioned before, you know, the important thing about Jerusalem is regardless of where anybody is on this issue, the fact that he would do what he said, and you've got these cynical people who are criticizing him even after they voted to do the same thing. Many, many times for decades, all these presidents have done this cynical dance to get your vote. And we have seen that and fed up with that so much with the Republican establishment. And here he says, yeah, I'm going to do it. And then he actually does. And they can't believe it.
Yeah, you know, he made a lot of promises during the campaign. Yeah. And, you know, politicians always make promises. Trump made, I think, more than, you know, but his track record is unbelievable in terms of actually fulfilling his promises. That's what's so unusual about this. And he reminds us, too. You know, he reminds us,
that's right.
I told you I was going to do this. I'm doing it, which is just absolutely remarkable. We haven't seen this in American politics, really, nothing like it since the 1980s.
And, you know, he would have kept a lot more promises, things like the wall and so forth and so on, if he hadn't been opposed by Republican establishment figures. That's why these primaries coming up are going to be so important this next year, because they have been the key opposition. And I said that before the election. I said that his biggest opposition is going to be coming from the Democrats. It'll be coming from Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. That's what we see even with the tax return thing. They're the ones coming in there. Everybody knows it's a great deal. The EU is saying, wait a minute, this is such a good deal. You're making America great again. It's going to hurt our economies. But it may be they might mess it up with the details in this tax plan. These Republican establishment.
That's right. The Republican establishment has been awful. And the judicial system, the judges that have been appointed by Obama and Clinton and even George Bush have been, you know, the major source of opposition. No sooner does Trump take action than he's challenged by these unelected, you know, gods. Mm-hmm. And it's so frustrating, and he's persistent, and he eventually wins. It may have to go to the Supreme Court, but he's acting within the law every single time.
That's right. And if they had done the things that he had to say, that terror attack that was attempted yesterday would never have taken place if we didn't have the lottery, which the American people are losing consistently, and the chain migration. Thank you so much for joining us, Joseph Farah. And you can find him at WND.com. He's the editor CEO of WND, and on Twitter at Joseph Farah. Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Farah.
Thank you, David. God bless.
Thank you. And that concludes our broadcast. Thank you for listening.